So last episode, I said I was going to be recording two episodes of this podcast, but I never got around to recording the second one just because, well, life got in the way again. And that's kind of just that's how my life story has been the past couple of days, though. So yeah, there you go. But anyway, this episode right here, kind of goes back to my original intention for this podcast in the first place. The title of this podcast is The Oral History of Marvel Legends. However, I have actually never really talked about the history of Marvel Legends. So I'm about to rectify that, starting with this episode right here. So let's go ahead and get started. What is going on, you guys? My name is Ramney, and this is an Oral History of Marvel Legends podcast. Let's get started. Welcome, you guys, once again to the podcast, and today's episode is a little bit of history of Marvel Legends. Now, I talk about oral history of Marvel Legends. I talk about oral history, with kind of with the assumption that you guys know what that means. Now, oral history obviously is just information being passed down. Oral history is from generation to generation, but in this context of collecting Marvel Legends, it's being passed down from old collectors, I guess, to new collectors. So that's kind of how I envision this podcast anyway. And in today's episode, I wanted to talk about kind of specifically how the Marvel Legends line got started back in 2002. So that's what this is. So we're going to talk about 2002. We're going to focus on the figures that came out in the first year of the launch of this line, the Marvel Legends line by Toy Biz. So let's rewind the clock back to 2002, which is 20 something odd years ago. 20 years ago almost now. And I can't math anymore. And let's talk about the figures that came out at the time, starting with Series 1. Now, when I was doing some research of the figures from the very first waves of Marvel Legends, I purposely looked for websites that reviewed these figures at the time of their release, kind of having opinions that are untainted and unmarred by the technological innovations that we enjoy today. We've come a long way with the evolution of just the sculpt, the engineering of these action figures. So we kind of nowadays, when we compare or when we do like a retro review of old Marvel Legends figures, we look at it from today's standpoint, like modern day action figure standpoint. And at by doing that, we never really see kind of like the context in which these figures, these older figures, the context at which they came out. So we're always going to be looking at those old figures from the figures and compare them to the figures that are out today, which is going to be an unfair type of review. So when I did my research, I purposely looked for these websites that reviewed them, these figures, these very first figures when they were released. And that way you get like this very genuine reaction, very genuine just opinions on the figures as they came out. So, and it sort of gives you a little bit of context of what it was like for collecting back then. So that's kind of the hope of this episode anyway. Now, I don't claim to know everything about Marvel Legends. I have been collecting since almost the very beginning. I started collecting in 2004, 2003-ish, late 2003, 2004. It's sort of around that time. So, and I still have like very fond memories of this era and these figures. I still have a bunch of these earliest Marvel Legends figures. I never sold any of my Toy Biz figures, which I'm actually quite lucky about. A story about me and how I collected was that, the first episode of this podcast, I talked about how I got introduced to the Marvel Legends line. And if you guys want to go back to that first podcast episode, definitely go do that. It kind of shows you my collecting origin story, what I called it. But anyway, I started in Series 6, I believe it was. And so what I had to do is Series 6 was the first wave that I completed. But then I drove around and fortunately at the time, collecting wasn't very widespread. So I was able to go back and find Series 5 figures, Series 4, Series 3, Series 2, and Series 1. I was able to track them down with relative ease. This is coming from a Canadian collector. I'm from Canada. These guys were abundant, and I was able to find them by going to the Walmarts, the Zellers at the time, I believe, the Kmarts, and we don't have Target. We don't have Walgreens. Toys R Us. So I was able to track them down just by driving around the city and purposely trying to find these figures. Anyway, so that's kind of that. So I have kind of an idea of how collecting was from the very get-go. From a Canadian standpoint anyway, which I imagine that the American collecting community was sort of similar as well. Now, as I mentioned, Series 1 came out in 2002, May 2002 to be exact. So that was the very first time that we got these the Marvel Legends figures. That was the release of the first wave, or Series 1. And in 2002, I guess let me give you a little bit of context of what things were like in 2002. So I wrote a couple of notes down of what it was like back in 2002. Now, at the time, like Spider-Man Classics was already 2 years in, because Spider-Man Classics launched back in 2000, and this was the line that introduced the 6-inch scale. Toy Biz introduced this brand new scale, slightly bigger than what they had previously. And the main focus of Spider-Man Classics was sculpt and articulation, particularly articulation. That's actually kind of hard to say, particularly articulation. So at the time, Spider-Man Classics was in its second year. And back then, X-Men had just come out 2 years before that. Blade 2 and Spider-Man were huge. I think they came out in 2001, 2002, and the movie Daredevil came out in 2003. So those, there was no MCU back then. We were starting to get these comic book movies. There was Diamond Select Toys, but it was also starting up. So Diamond Select Toys, Marvel Select, that line. It was starting up at the same time, and it was the distribution was actually being handled by Toy Biz. However, Diamond Select, Marvel Select, was had a focus on Ultimate Marvel figures and Marvel Knights figures, so it wasn't a direct competition. Now, to give you a little bit of context, the reason for this new focus on articulation and sculpt was because of all the innovations that Mark Farland Toys has created with its Spawn line and all of the other lines that that Mark Farland had at the time. So I'm trying to think of the other Mark Farland Toys lines, but mainly Spawn McFarlane Toys kind of pushed for amazing sculpts, fine details. If you compare it to, if you compare McFarlane Toys to what was being released back then, there's like a huge, very distinct difference. And it's almost as if these were lifelike, you know, like these mini statuettes. At the time, in 2002, McFarlane Toys was already in like Series 20, Series 21. And then they were coming out with these amazing, amazing figures that are not necessarily action figures. They're kind of more statues. So McFarlane sort of went in the way of like statue collectibles. And Todd McFarlane was very notorious in saying that nobody really wanted articulation. They wanted fine details. So that was his perspective. And so he went about that way. And at the time, I was also collecting Spawn. Spawn was my... I loved Spawn ever since the movie that came out in 1997, I believe it was. So McFarlane Toys Spawn, it was huge. It was already like deep into it. They were having, like, McFarlane also had the license for like these sports figures, NFL, NBA, all that stuff, and movie monsters, all those guys. So that was happening then as well. Toy Biz was also producing figures for the Lord of the Rings franchise at the time in 2002. So that was pretty cool. And yeah, so we got Spider-Man Classics, but we didn't get Hulk Classics or Fantastic Four Classics at the time. So it wasn't out back then. The thing with Spider-Man Classics is that they still did gimmicks. So it was still very gimmicky. You had like buttons that shoot missiles, or you know, backpacks that have water compartments that you use like that squirt water, that kind of thing. Web trap Spider-Man or whatnot. So Spider-Man Classics was still that. And that's sort of what Toy Biz looked like back in the 90s with their 5-inch line, was that they tried to put a lot of these gimmicks. But with Marvel Legends, they decided that you know, they're gonna avoid the gimmicks and they're going to focus on articulation and sculpt, which is a good decision. So these figures had an MSRP of $6.99 US. So at Walmart, I believe I was paying $7.99 or $8.99 for these figures, Canadian. So that's how much it used to cost. And yeah, so let's talk about these figures. Now, Series 1 came out in May 2002, and there were four figures in the line. And I'm sure you guys already know it. You got the three kind of staple members of what we now know as Avengers. You got Captain America, you've got Iron Man, you've got the Hulk. And then you got a weird one, which is Toad. So let's kind of talk about those four figures. So this is Series 1. Forgot to mention, in 2002, there were three waves that came out. One in May, Series 1 came out in May. Series 2 came out a few months later in September 2002. And then Series 3 came out a few months after that, just at the end, tail end of the year there in December, Series 3 came out. So let's go back to Series 1 now and let's kind of talk about them. And when I was doing my research, most of the reviews that I found were... like these old reviews were from a website that I used to follow, OAFE.net, online action figure entertainment.net. So that's kind of the main place that I used to read these reviews. I remember they used to have a forum as well that I was super active in back in the day. The Foosh was also very active back then. Marvel Legends.net, I think, were I'm not sure if they came out like exactly when Marvel Legends came out, but it was up pretty early. Anyway, so in 2002 there was no YouTube, so there were no YouTube reviews. Everything, all the reviews were written, and I actually enjoy it that way. So taking a look at these four figures that came out, let's start with the Captain America one. The Captain America came with a base. Now these figures all came with bases. Captain America's was like a bullet-ridden wall with an American flag. I still have those. And now this Captain America is probably, when it came out, just kind of summing up all the reviews that I read, this Captain America was like the best Captain America that came out. It was very, the sculpt of it was good. The articulation was really good. The face sculpt was really good for its time. And yeah, it didn't have the ankle rocker that we're familiar with now, which is fine, but the way that it looks exactly like how he should, which is from the comics. Like from the comics, are very, very comic accurate, is what I'm trying to say. And looking at it does not have the only thing about it doesn't have the sculpted, what do you call it, the chainmail. Doesn't have that. However, it does have a deco of it, of the chainmail, which is, it's enough. It makes it look like Captain America. Now, this is kind of the gold standard at the time of what figures should look like, especially like the standard superhero body. So that's what Captain America kind of resembles. And looking at what it looks like, I'm looking at pictures of it now. I believe it's got a diaphragm joint and also a waist swivel, which is become standard. A lot of the stuff that's on this figure became like articulation standards, because at the time, I mean, if even if you compare it to the Spider-Man Classics figures, a lot of the Spider-Man Classics was they were experimenting with articulation, and it wasn't exactly the best. I remember the standard Spider-Man body had like this weird bicep cut that cuts right in the middle of the bicep, I believe, and that was kind of a weird one. But I think this Captain America kind of nailed it, how it should look, how figures at this scale should look. So that's Captain America. Now the Iron Man, pretty much the same thing. The only the there are a couple issues with this one. However, it does have like very nice classic yellow and red colors. And what's cool about it is it actually looks like a guy that's inside a tin suit. Slightly taller, slightly bigger than Captain America. And it's got a removable faceplate, which is pretty awesome. I kind of broke the neck of mine, the original one that I bought back in 2004, whenever I bought it. But yeah, I still have my old figures. Again, this has like a waist swivel and a diaphragm joint. The diaphragm joint didn't move very much, but that's, they're still experimenting. And also, you've got like this weird, I don't know what kind of articulation. It's like the shoulder blade articulation was kind of weird, but they were experimenting, and you were able to bring his arms forward, which was really cool. So, I mean, for Iron Man, this is actually like a top-notch figure, and they would go on to use this buck for a few more figures down the line. Whereas they did not use Captain America for any other buck, I believe. So that's that. Now, Iron Man came with two variants. There was a pointy mask variant that's gold and red, and also the stealth version came out around the same time. I actually did not find those because they were their variants, but they were called chase figures because they were intended to be short packed and very, very limited. And that's why they're called chase figures, is because you kind of had to chase after them. You had to really try hard to find these figures. And I was never able to find them. So yeah, I only got the Tony Stark, the original release. And it comes with like some sort of antenna base that has the word Stark going down the panel, which was a very cool design. The next figure is the Hulk action figure. And what's really cool about this Hulk is it gives you its size is what makes it unique, and it's how he should be. He should be taller than Iron Man, he should be taller than Captain America. So Toy Biz actually pulled it off where they created an in-scale Hulk to go with the six-inch line. If you compare this Hulk to the Hulks that we get now, especially the 80th anniversary body, it's tiny. But for its time, this was, I mean, I think this was the biggest Hulk that they released at the time. I mean, not counting like the big gigantic Mego ones or anything like that, but this was an enormous figure. Now, if you look at it now in today's eyes, I mean, it doesn't quite capture the size, the bulkiness of the Hulk. But for its time, this was an amazing figure. Again, it's got that diaphragm joint with a waist swivel, but it's got a T joint for the crotch. A T crotch? Yeah, that's what it's called, a T crotch, I believe. And it's got like these kind of weird hands. The thing with hands, the thing with fingers with Toy Biz is that they were trying really hard. They're pushing for as much articulation as possible. And, you know, a lot of the figures suffered from it. I'm not a big fan of it even back then, because I found that a lot of the pins that go through the fingers, individual fingers, that they would come out and all the fingers would fall out. Which happened to my Bullseye, which is a story for another time. But yeah, I'm not a huge fan of these figures. The Hulk, however, had, I believe he had open palm ones, but with moving fingers still, and also had a flat palm one, and I believe the flat palm one had bendy wire inside that you could attempt to bend the fingers, but never really worked well. So the weird thing about this Hulk then is that he's always got like these open palms, which is good if you're trying to do like the thunderclap. But you know, would have been nice to have fists or something with this Hulk. Yeah, not a bad sculpt. These are all hand sculpted by trying to think of the sculptors. I think Dave Cortez, Phil Ramirez, I believe, are some of the old sculptors. Sam Greenwell, I think, is another one. So these were sculpted by hand, and they were not computer sculpted, I believe, at the time. So these were pretty good. So that's three. Those are the three Avengers members. And then you got the odd one out, which is Toad. And Toad, if you look at Toad, I still have my Toad, and I still cherish it. It's an ugly looking figure, it is, but I mean, Toad's supposed to be, it's not exactly the most handsome guy. If you look at his articulation compared to the others, he doesn't have very much, and there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is that this Toad was supposed to be released with an X2 like X-Men 2 figure line that was discontinued by Toy Biz. They were only able to release one set from that line, and I don't remember what it's called. Evolution of X, I believe it was called. I'm kind of trying to remember off the top of my head now. But it's supposed to compare the movie version versus the comic version of each character, and they were only able to do it with Wolverine. So there was a Hugh Jackman Wolverine figure, and then the comic Wolverine figure. So that was what it was supposed to be. That one came out, and they were supposed to do one with Toad as well, with Ray Park Toad from the first X-Men movie, and then the comic Toad, which was this figure right here. This figure was not intended to be released in the first series of Marvel Legends. It just happened to be made fully rendered at the time. So they, like, Toy Biz just went ahead, and because the line was discontinued, but this figure was already pretty much done, they decided to put him in with series one. And I think what they were trying to do was they were trying to, you know, create waves that are a mix of villains and superheroes, and this was the villain. So if you compare it to the other three, this Toad to the other three figures, it doesn't hold up. But if you look at the sculpt, very well done. Articulation not on par, but the paint job, I think out of all three of them, the Toad one hands down has the best paint job. He's filthy, he looks dirty. There's a really great paint wash, there's a nice dry brushing to bring out the lighter areas, and he comes with this really cool base that is it's a stream. It's what it looks like. It's like you got this clear plastic that's supposed to be water. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but I believe it's even got a frog jumping out of it. And he's also holding a frog, so this figure is pretty awesome, I would say. Hands down, definitely need a new one for our shelf, but with this one, people may dismiss it, but it does deserve its place in Marvel Legends history. So that's that for series one. When this came out, there wasn't really a lot of fanfare. I don't remember any commercials or anything about it. All it is if you had Wizard magazine, then you would have gotten a sneak peek of these figures right here. So Wizard was what was huge back in the day. There was no Toy Fair magazine yet around this time. I don't remember exactly when Toy Fair came out, but Marvel Legends was advertised in Wizard magazine, from what I recall, and not Toy Fair. So that's Wave 1. Very cool. The way that it was released in clamshell packaging in the States. If you're stateside, you get a comic book with the figures. But if you live overseas, if you live in Canada, Australia, parts of Europe, then you might have gotten, instead of a comic, you probably got a poster. And that's what I got. For a lot of these figures, I didn't get the comic. I got the foil posters. They were the size of a comic, but that's what I got for these figures anyway. So, going forward now, let's go to series two. In series two, pretty much a lot of the same stuff here, but this time they have a focus. They have their focus is Fantastic Four. And so you have these four figures, which is the standard at the time, is you have four figures per wave, per series. And I remember seeing this at the Toys R Us. I remember seeing these four. So this is, I believe this is the second wave, or the second wave of figures that I was able to complete after Series 6 was Series 2. And these figures include Doctor Doom, which was, I guess you could call, the villain of the wave. The Thing. You got the Human Torch. And you have Namor the Submariner. And which I guess you could also count as a villain, because he's sometimes a villain, sometimes a anti-hero. I like to think of him as a villain, so anti-hero actually. So yeah, let's start with Doctor Doom. Doctor Doom is, if you look at this figure, for its time, this was the best Doctor Doom figure that came out. The sculpt, especially on the tunic, you could see like the details. The details are fantastic, and then there's a like very slight paint wash over it that's not too dark, and that's kind of highlighted the sculpt greatly. So that was very cool. Doctor Doom came with a variant, Doombot, which I was able to find two, but I lost. I don't know what happened to the other one. I was able to find two Doombots along with Doctor Doom back in the day, but for some reason I can't find my second Doombot, so who knows what happened to it. This Doctor Doom had a cape and a hood that was attached, so the cape and the hood were together, and you could pull them out and you could change the faceplate. And yeah, the variant, you couldn't really tell which one was the variant if you had the mask on, because you had to take out the mask in order to see whether it was a Doombot or Victor Von Doom himself. This figure, it's still one of my favorites. Now, it's been toppled. He used to be my favorite Doctor Doom, but now that we have the Doctor Dooms that were released last year, they've become my favorite. But this one kind of still stands the test of time. It's pretty cool. The only thing is that the cape, it was a little bit more rubbery, and the paint that they have on the cape, as time progressed, the paint kind of got sticky. So that was the only issue. And that's the issue that I have with my old Doctor Dooms anyway. The thing with these figures is that they're doing a lot of paint washes on them, and where sometimes they go a little bit too far with the paint washes, it makes the figures look dirty. I still appreciate that they do try to put that much detail into them. Like, it really makes the sculpt stand out. Speaking of the thing is, I would say, probably my favorite figure at the time was this Thing, because of how cool he looked. He looks exactly as he was drawn in the comics. The issue that I had with this figure was the shoulder blades again keep getting exposed anytime you bring the hands forward. But, you know, this is Toy Biz experimenting, so it's kind of forgivable. But the face sculpt is, I mean, it's spot on the Thing. Like, it's really cool. Now, this has been, again, just like the Doctor Doom, this Thing figure has been replaced. It used to be one of my favorites back then, but the brand new one that Hasbro put out has definitely become my new favorite now. But yeah, this Thing, I believe it came, trying to remember if it came with a variant. I believe it did come with a variant that had a trench coat, sunglasses, and a fedora. So that was kind of the chase figure for it. What I didn't like about this thing was that it didn't have fists, so wasn't really able to clobber anybody. But what I do like about it is that the sculpt of like the rock, the individual rocks is just it stands out because of the wash that's over him. So that was pretty cool. With Doctor Doom, it came with like a Latverian castle kind of platform. And with the thing, you had a brick wall that had some graffiti, something about Yancey Street, if I remember. Yeah, it had some graffiti on it that you were able to like punch, and then it sort of breaks apart. So that was really cool. At the time, there was no build-a-figure concept yet. They were also so instead, Toy Biz gave us, like these dioramas, these backgrounds, a lot of these really cool accessories instead. And yeah, so that's the thing right there. The Human Torch actually reuses that Spider-Man kind of daredevil body that was already being used in Spider-Man Classics. So this buck was no surprise. It's a nice standard buck for a skinny superhero type. And I believe there's some new sculpt. The head definitely was sculpted as new. I believe the forearms and the calves were also new because they sculpted some flames coming out from them. What I like about this Human Torch is that it's got like the lines that if you look at the old comics, the Human Torch was drawn with these lines that sort of signify the flame effect. So that's what this figure has, and that's what I like about it. There was a Chase Human Torch figure, and that Chase figure, which I was never able to find, so I don't have it, is the one with the number 4 logo painted on his chest, kind of like a flame effect on that 4 logo. So that's the Chase. And both the original release and the Chase figure came with the kind of like the, what do you call it? It's like a flame effect. I believe it's been used before from a different Toy Biz line. I believe it's like the 5-inch line. This flame effect has been used before, but it's repurposed for this Human Torch right here. Unlike the Human Torch, which is pretty opaque, the flame effect was, I believe, translucent, which is really cool. What I like with this figure is the fact that you see a gradient from red to yellow on the flames. That's, I mean, it's super cool, like a top-notch painting. And then the last figure is Namor. Namor came with like this water spiral that you could clip Namor onto so that he's like kind of being flying above the water kind of thing. So that's a pretty cool effect. He also came with a spear. And this was a pretty cool figure. It didn't have the torso articulation that came with a lot of the figures. Trying to look at a picture of Namor here. Yeah, the other figures kind of have like that combination diaphragm joint with a waist swivel. However, this Namor did not come with a diaphragm joint, so he was all it was just a waist swivel for him. What I didn't like about this figure was that it had skinny legs. But it was this Namor buck that came out actually became a standard buck for other figures that the Toy Biz would release down the line. But it works for Namor. It really does. And this Namor, It had the he, it's the one with the vest and the belt and the black pants. So it's not the traditional kind of just like undies only type of Namor. And I don't believe we got another figure of this. No, we don't. This is the only look of Namor that we got in Marvel Legends. But the head sculpt is really good. It's got that flat head that was super popular, that people used to draw Namor back in the day, like a very, very, like weird looking flat top. He had that. He's got the pointy ears and the pointy eyebrows. And yeah, overall, just generally looks very badass. It looks very, very cool. And yeah, a worthy addition to the Marvel Legends line. Now, of all of these, I'd say Namor is probably the least known, outside of the outside of like Marvel fandom, because for the most part, people know who Doctor Doom is, people know who the Human Torch is, and the Thing, and even in the old, what do you call it, series one, people were kind of familiar with Iron Man, Captain America, and Hulk. They even know Toad from the movies, so Namor is sort of like the, like kind of the obscure one out of these original four. Now we're not quite done in series two because the one odd thing about series two was that they released a variant of the Hulk in a torn up white t-shirt and blue pants. So that's a thing that they did back then. They kind of stopped doing that. But yeah, they created a repaint of the Series 1 Hulk in Series 2. Not officially Series 2, but if you look at the packaging, it does say Series 2. So I don't quite know what the full story is to that, but that's what it is. And between Series 1 and Series 2, I do prefer Series 1 just because of character selection. However, my favorite figure is the Thing from Series 2. Now, let's move on to Series 3, which came out in December 2002. And this time around, well, originally the plan was to release four figures, and then they just added a fifth one anyway. So let's take a look at these figures. The first one is Ghost Rider. This is the Dan Ketch version of Ghost Rider, not Johnny Blaze. The next one is Thor. And then you got the Tiger Stripe Wolverine. That's the blue and yellow Wolverine. And then you have Magneto, who is the villain of this wave, of this series. And then the odd one, so those are the original four, and then they shoehorned in an odd one, which is the movie Daredevil. And this was a 2002 release. However, Daredevil the movie was like the Daredevil movie was going to be released the following year in February, so they kind of just shoehorned this movie Daredevil in. And I guess we'll start with by talking about him. So like I said, the movie Daredevil was set to be released in 2003. I believe February 2003 was when it came out, and that's the Daredevil movie starring Ben Affleck as Daredevil. You got Jennifer Garner as Elektra, and you have Colin Farrell as Bullseye. So that movie didn't have any other toys that I can recall to tie in except for this one Daredevil figure. So yeah, this is movie Daredevil. It's the very first time that we got a movie character in the Marvel Legends line. And if you look at the packaging for Series 3, even though this Daredevil figure says Series 3, if you look at the packaging of any of the other figures, you don't see this Daredevil in the pack in the packaging. It just says series three figures are, you know, Wolverine, Thor, Magneto, and Ghost Rider. So yeah, they just shoehorned this guy in. And I believe when it was released in December 2002, they did not release Daredevil at the same time. It was when the movie came out that they started putting him into in with the other figures. So that's an odd one. And the funny thing is they would go on to reuse this buck for another figure down the line, which I'll let you guys kind of guess what figure that is. But yeah, it's a Marvel Legends figure using the old Daredevil movie figure buck. So let me know if you guys know what I'm talking about. However, this buck right here, brand new sculpt, not quite up to par compared to the other figures that came before it, because it doesn't have the double joints and it's got the T crotch. So the other figures before that, Toy Biz has been experimenting with double jointed knees, double jointed elbows. You've got a shoulder ball as opposed to a shoulder hinge. This Daredevil has a shoulder hinge as well. So, you know, the articulation is not up to par. I don't even believe there was a waist swivel. I think there might have been a waist swivel, but definitely no diaphragm joint. It's actually, you know, considering it's a very, very old sculpt, it's not bad, and it does look like Ben Affleck under the mask there. So that's pretty cool. And this Daredevil figure came with the stained glass window from the church, from the climax of the movie. So that was pretty cool, actually. That is quite the background for him. So yeah, I actually do not have this figure, and if I, you know, it just doesn't. I tried looking for it on eBay a few years back now, just to see how much it costs, just so I can round up my collection from back then, but I just never pulled the trigger on him. I didn't think it warranted, you know, spending more money, because it was kind of a little expensive, from what I recall, for a figure that's really, even back then, was not up to par with the rest. So yeah, but this Daredevil figure sort of has the distinction of being the very first movie figure in the Marvel Legends line. Let's go to Ghost Rider next. And this Ghost Rider is pretty cool because it's the first vehicle accessory that we ever got. Now, if you put the Ghost Rider in that vehicle, that motorcycle is way too small. It's not big enough for this figure. Like that motorcycle would fit a 5-inch figure better. But the Ghost Rider, however, is actually really good. I have mine in Canada. I don't have mine here in Thailand where I live. That's the trouble with being an expat, is that I started my collection in a different country, but it would be a pain in the ass to have to haul my entire collection here. So I was very selective with the figures that I brought over, and Ghost Rider was not one of them, unfortunately, because this is the only Dan Ketch Ghost Rider that we've gotten in this scale so far. So yeah, Hasbro has been lagging quite a bit. Back in the 90s, Dan Ketch Ghost Rider was kind of like the big deal. I remember from the trading cards, they made a big deal out of this guy. He was the new replacement to Johnny Blaze, and they were definitely hyping him up. And yeah, I bought into the hype. I enjoyed Midnight Suns, where he appeared in. I enjoyed the first few issues of Ghost Rider when I read it back in the day, because I thought, I mean, you can't go wrong with Spike's motorcycle, flaming motorcycle, flaming skull head. Can't go wrong with that design, right? The thing with this figure is that everything is opaque. Nothing is translucent. So far, at this stage, Toy Biz hasn't really created any translucent parts to any of their figures. So not even the flame that is on top of the skull head is translucent, nor were the wheels on the motorcycle. Now, the weird thing about the wheels is that the flames are sculpted on top of them, so they don't really spin because they're not round. So if you lift it up, you can actually see that there are actually tiny wheels at the bottom of the motorcycle, and those roll, so you know you're able to roll this thing, but not the actual wheel of it, if you guys know what I mean. But you know, this is the only version in figure form of this version of Ghost Rider's motorcycle. This motorcycle is very distinct in that it's got like this skull kind of, the front of it has this very distinct skull, I don't know what you call that, shield or whatnot. So yeah, you can't exactly replace this motorcycle with other motorcycles because this is very distinct. But yeah, this figure is actually really good. The texture on it is amazing. Brand new sculpt again. I don't think this sculpt was ever used for any other figure after this. But yeah, they definitely did a really good job of sculpting like this kind of like leathery, almost like snakeskin, almost like texture to the whole getup. So very well done. The chain, I believe, was metal. Yeah, so he did come with a chain. Magneto is next. And this Magneto is actually a reuse of the Series 1 Iron Man body, which was a very odd choice. Even back then, it was kind of an odd choice to use Iron Man's buck for Magneto, because we never really thought of Magneto as this big, bulky guy that's bigger than Captain America, which is what this buck was. Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be, Iron Man is a guy in a tin suit. Magneto is just an older guy in a spandex suit, and you have him as huge as Iron Man. So that was kind of what was off about it. However, if you overlook that, you'll actually see how awesome this figure is. And it took a long time for Hasbro to even top this figure. It's got a removable helmet, which reveals a really good sculpt of Magneto. And you've got like brand new legs and brand new forearms, I believe. Those are newly sculpted because there are those purple rings that go around. So yeah, there's some new stuff to this as well. And also the cape is brand new. This Magneto came with a Sentinel, like a broken Sentinel base, which is really cool. I'm trying to think of other things to add to this figure. I wasn't able to find Magneto until like later on. I remember I remember only having Ghost Rider, Wolverine, and Thor for the longest time, and was not able to complete Series 3 like I did with the other two. So yeah, Magneto was hard for some reason for me to acquire back in the day. And yeah, so that's cool. And now let's talk about Wolverine. Wolverine, I have both versions. There's the original release, which is the one with the mask, and then you have the maskless chase or variant that was short packed. So yeah, it was a chase figure. This is the first time that Wolverine came out in Marvel Legends. However, this is not the first time that we've seen this buck, because this buck of Wolverine was actually a part of that exact same line that Toad was in, the Evolution of X. Now, they tweaked that Wolverine from that line, and they added and they modded to it. They added more articulation to it. They changed the hips. They added, I'm trying to think of what else they added to it, but the biggest thing was that they changed the hips to from a T-joint to, I don't even know what you call this one, a joint with more range. And and then they released it in this line. So that's how this Marvel Legends figure came to be. And that's why you have this weird kind of like pre-posed torso. That's very distinct with this figure. No one else at this time, no one else has like this pre-posed look to him. But if you look at Wolverine, you can kind of see that he's got his torso twisted a little bit. So that's why that is the way it is. Now, this Wolverine was really awesome for its time. The best Wolverine for its time, actually. He's got that scowl, he's got that angry look, he's got the beefiness that you come to expect from Wolverine, from Logan. The only issues with it was that the claws were very bendy, and they were prone to warping. And I'm trying to think of the other thing. Oh, there was another issue. The scale. He was way too tall for Wolverine. If you stand him up, he's pretty much on par with the other figures. So yeah, Wolverine is supposed to be way shorter than the others, and that didn't happen here. So that was the other issue with it. Now, the maskless version is no different. It's the exact same, pretty much. It's just you got the maskless head. So that's pretty cool. And this Wolverine came with a Hellfire Club guard base. I think there was three of them. It was kind of sculpted as part of a background there. So that was pretty cool. Next one, you have Thor. And this Thor, I remember this Thor being such a big figure. If you stand him next to Iron Man and Captain America, the Holy Trinity of the Avengers, he is appropriately tall. And if you look at his arms, especially, his arms are huge. And I remember looking at those arms in particular and saying, holy crap, those are some huge arms on that Thor figure. And I think that's why I really like this figure so much. He's got a very distinct face. The sculpt is very, almost like, I don't know. I can't picture it. Like, he's got a very distinct kind of like Nordic face, like a Viking warrior type of face. And that was really cool. Now, I did have issues with mine. I actually bought a second one because my Thor figure broke on the wrist. The original one that I bought a long time ago, it broke on the wrist, so the arm popped off and I was never able to fix it. So what I did was I bought another one to replace it. what I liked about this figure is the fact that it's big and bulky, especially when you look at the cape. The cape kind of billows wide. It really is. This is a really wide figure. And it sort of gives him like this really huge stature on your shelf. It comes with Mjolnir, the hammer, which you can hold. I think he's got the right hand has the gripping hand, but the thing with Toy Biz is that they like to articulate the fingers. The problem with that is once you move it around too much, that articulation just starts to get loose. And at some point, because the hammer is a little bit heavy, at some point he won't be able to hold the hammer. And that's what happened with mine, is that you just can't hold the hammer anymore because that articulation got loose. You can fix it, but you know, that's an issue that that came with this figure. But it is probably, yeah, like this figure right here, the only issue as well, aside from that, is that, you know, Thor is supposed to have six of those discs on his costume, his traditional costume there. They didn't have enough room in the crotch area to have two more discs. So this Thor only came with the four discs, two on his chest, and then the other two kind of on his abdomen area there. So there isn't the two that's on his crotch. But other than that, again, sculpted by, I believe, Dave Cortez. It doesn't have the torso articulation like the others, but still a really great figure nonetheless. Very, very menacing, very heroic on your shelf. Like, awesome to put him behind Cap and Iron Man. Really is. So that's that, you guys. So kind of looking at them overall now, and there were a couple of firsts, you know, like I mentioned, Daredevil was the first movie figure that we got. Toad was the first villain that we got, which is a weird distinction given to, of all villains in Marvel Universe, Toad. Trying to think of other news. First vehicle was Ghost Rider's motorcycle. And yeah, some of the figures here will go on to be reused again. The first reuse was the Magneto. Magneto reusing the Iron Man buck, not counting the fact that Human Torch was already a reuse of a Spider-Man Classics buck. We got the first variant, which is the Chase Iron Man figures. Those are the first variants ever. And yeah, I think that's it. So overall, the figures that came out in 2002 were a very good start to the Marvel Legends line. They set the bar for what the line is supposed to be. And at the time, you know, they were kind of adhering to the 6-inch line. It wasn't until later on that, you know, these figures that were supposed to be 1/12 scale kind of started growing a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more to what we have today. But at the time, these were the best figures around for these figures, or for these characters. And I'm glad to have most of them. And that's that. So let me know what you guys think of this episode of us kind of deep diving into just the very first inaugural year of Marvel Legends. Let me know what you guys thought of the figures back then. Kind of try to have an unbiased opinion of what you thought of these figures back in the day, if you're one of those old collectors like me. These figures, like, kind of hard to emphasize now, but these figures at the time were so innovative that any figure release, you were just so blown away by the sculpt. You're blown away by just the fact that it exists. That's how I felt back then, because there was there were no other figures like these ones that were coming out. So pretty awesome. Anyway, I think I'm going to end it there, you guys. Now, again, if you guys care to send me a message, make sure you guys find the link in the description of this podcast episode. And, yeah, send me a voice recording, and I will gladly add it to a future episode. And make sure you guys follow me on Instagram at Articulatrix. I do have a link to the... I use this app called Padlet to organize my thoughts for the Marvel Legends history. So I sort of created like this Padlet of Series 1, Series 2, and Series 3. So if you guys want to see kind of like the websites, the sources that I got, that I use to kind of do my research, I'll put that in the link as well. Anyway, I think that's it. Hope you guys are having a good 2 months, and I hope you guys have been enjoying WandaVision. I just saw the penultimate episode of WandaVision, episode 8, earlier today, and definitely blown away by it, especially the mid-credits scene there. That was quite the kicker. And that's it, you guys. So I hope you guys have a awesome day, and I'll see you guys next time. Take care.